Hello, and thanks for being with us here on The New Life Show, a series of talks with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael Eshet. Hello. Today, we'd like to talk about the changing labor market. We're working people, our parents were working people, even our grandparents were working people. And if we take a broader look at the labor market, where we spend most of our time, we'll see that it really changed. We'd like to understand why and how. Be with us. It's going to be interesting. Yael, please.
Yeah.
Today we're going to talk about the changes that happened in the past 60, 70 years in the labor market, starting with how much time we dedicate to it, how important it is for us. What does our day-to-day life look like in light of these changes that the labor market's going through? And if I look at my family, for example, then my grandmother, she was from the generation of immigrants who came here to Israel. She worked for many hours, really hard. My grandfather, he was ill. She was the one who mainly provided for the family, and she was really happy about her work, about everything she did. Despite all the hardship, it was something very joyful. My parents, they wanted easier work with a higher income, something more stable, for it to be good work, stable work with financial security. At first, my father worked and my mother, she took care of us. Then she also went to work. And she was really happy about her work. After some time, she wanted to develop a bit. She went to study and found her place in the labor market. We were taught to go to the university, to have a career, meaning in order for us to really make it in life and be happy like they wanted us to, it both demanded us to, first of all, develop a career, and they wanted for us to be competitive, meaning that we'll always be relevant to the labor market. So we'll succeed and have status. My husband and I, we switched jobs every few years. We even switched professions. Both of us had to work. We no longer had the privilege that one person has to work and the other can sit at home. But along with there being more freedom of choice, more mobility between the different jobs and positions, there's a lot of pressure, tension, financial insecurity, something that my parents didn't experience, always being afraid about having a job tomorrow. That also isn't something that's of the obvious. The proprietor doesn't owe us anything. And so on the one hand, we live in modern slavery. And on the other hand, we really want to realize ourselves in our careers and so on. So if I look at my grandmother, she did really simple work and she was really happy about it, even though that it was very hard physical work. Most of us sit in offices and we're not that happy about what we have. What was it about that generation of our grandparents that we are lacking that made them happy with their jobs? Maybe, first of all, we have to see how it was throughout the generations. First of all, let's talk about the output of the work. All in all, what did a person create by all of his manual work? Either it's a farmer working with his hands, carrying water, many things. All in all, in the past 100 or 200 years, all the machinery began with the steam motor, then electrical motor, then diesel. All in all, these things started in the past 100 years. What happened is that, first of all, the woman, she was a housewife. The man used to work. She used to raise the children. He used wind bread. It was enough for them. They didn't know about the entire world, about the ability to run around everywhere, but they lived where they were, and they continued this way from one generation to the next. And there was one breadwinner, and it was enough for them, for their basic needs. They knew that we need this, this, and that, and that's it. Life doesn't allow us to have more than that. Later, with the industrial development, workers were brought in from where? Those farmers. They were brought to the cities. At first, the men went and the women stayed in the villages. Just like now that you have foreign workers, that their families stay at home, they work here and they send them money. It was the same, only inside the country. So first the men joined the cities and filled the workplaces. It was simple, manual work. They were taught a bit. They were given different courses as to how to become a carpenter, how to work with metal, to become a turner and so on, different kinds of jobs. And later on, they were taught how to work with new machines and so on. And so men started getting professions, and they advanced in the work. We're talking about the Industrial Revolution. Yeah, because before that, for thousands of years, it was something very simple. People ate what they made. That's it. Afterwards, industry as if completed utilizing men, women. They worked more at home or in agriculture, and they started hiring women for work too. This started from around the 1920s, 30s. Then women also entered the labor market because they saw that machinery is advancing and everything's working, so we can use women too. There's no point for a woman to sit at home and raise 10 children. It's enough to have a few, and all the rest should go to production. Why is there a need for that? Because the proprietor has a clear profit from every worker. If in the past there wasn't such a big profit, in the beginning mankind had slaves, meaning a slave is someone who works for food and sleep. He has food, place to sleep, the landlord takes care of his health because a slave is something valuable. And so people used to work this way. Afterwards, the more different tools developed, and the slave can give much more output. He could produce much more than he used to. So he became more and more responsible for the outcome, for the results of the work, meaning he could give the proprietor, instead of 5 tons of crops, 10 tons of crops, if he's a good worker. But a slave isn't a good worker. He'll get food, he'll get what he needs, also his wife and children will get what they need, but he won't get more than that. So, it was worthwhile for the proprietor to give him freedom, and instead of a slave, to take him as a worker, and set conditions. If you work like this and like that, you'll get such and such, differential income, in accordance with what you make for me. 2,000 or 3,000 years later, when the industrial era began, the industrial development, we started seeing that every worker gives his proprietor 10 times more output with the help of machinery. So every worker is very important for the proprietor. So there are places where you have to work really hard, like coal mines, like working with metal and so on. And there are more subtle places, like offices and so on. Suddenly you need many clerks in order to run your factories. It wasn't that way in the past. In the past, everything was simple. There was the boss and a few of his workers, and they did the metal work and carpentry and so on. Suddenly you need planning, you need engineers and technicians, and they have to check things and do things. Meaning there are already subtle kinds of work that are physically easy. And we can hire women for these jobs, why not? And also pay them less. And also usually they do the work quietly without having outbursts like men, without getting drunk and so on. It's much better and more convenient. So we as the owners, we can get out of them in this type of work much more than we can get out of men. So what do we need men for? We'll pay them less. They'll work quietly. Worthwhile doing. So they started hiring women for office work, for simple management, not for complicated administrative work. And this is how it was more or less to this day. And then the bosses, the proprietors, the managers, the owners, those that own the industry, and also correspondingly banks developed and so on, they started seeing that they lack what to produce. Suppose I want to manufacture 1,000 cups a day, but there's no one to buy them. So I have to start manufacturing things that aren't that necessary. So you need advertisement and fashion and public opinion. I have to influence the public in some way that it's important for them to sell it to them, because from every sale I have profit. And technology developed in parallel. And then we started making different things that we don't really need. Meaning, it's not something essential for life, but it's a kind of need that I earn from it. And then somehow I have to convince the audience that they should buy this, because that's customary. Without that, you won't be respected. If others travel abroad and you don't, then you have to feel yourself deprived, and so on and so forth. And we also introduced things like that everyone needs an apartment of their own, and vacation for children, and extracurricular activities for children, and more and more. And the wife has to be like this and like that, and the man has to be such and such. Meaning we inflated a person's life with so many things compared to how it was 100 years ago. Things that he needs and needs and needs to buy. Because they're the proprietors. And they make different things that if you buy them, they profit. For them it's very simple. And then you have an entire advertising industry that 50% of what you invest goes on advertisement. And around it you have television and radio and the movies and everything. In short, wherever I see profit or a potential profit by taming the public, that this is something good for them, then that's what we did. I'm speaking on behalf of the proprietors, the owners. And so each of us had an apartment of his own with different taxes and property taxes, and then he's trapped. He has to pay, and he has to work, and so on and so forth. And not only him, but also his wife. And so they're in this kind of a loop. like a dog trying to catch his own tail where you can't do anything. And then when a person starts his life, we recommend him to get an apartment and a car and take a mortgage and a loan from the bank and so on and so forth. And we see this especially in America. I get married, immediately I have a car, a house with everything in it, but I have debts for my entire life. No problem. If I have work, then this is how I live my life, and that was the dream. For me, it's a dream because nonetheless I have everything, and I can have a normal life from day one. And also it's the dream of the owners because now they know that I'm their slave. And I'll work better and better because then I'll get a few more pennies. And besides being able to pay for all these things, I'll also be able to go on vacation and so on. And we thought that this is how it's going to keep on developing. And the wife's working and I'm working and we can barely make ends meet. In short, everything's arranged in such a way that the proprietors, the industrialists, advertisers, and so on, they get the gist of the profit, and an ordinary person has to work. It's complete slavery. Never before was there such a cunning kind of slavery like there is today. What is a person that lives this kind of life feel? A person feels, and I talked a lot to people that I met both in Europe and in the United States, and there are plenty of people that I know here and there. They know that this is how they have to work, that this is how life is, but at least this kind of life gives them a standard of living. They're not looking at the fact that they have to work hard, because everyone's working hard. The boss is working hard too. And what do I care that he gets paid a lot? But I'm not in his place. But I can be. Please, advance. Maybe you'll also become someone. You'll open a small business. You'll grow. Even though that you no longer have the same opportunity as he had when he came from the village to the city 100 years ago, he started doing something, and he started selling shares on the stock market and so on. It didn't turn out this way for everyone, but we see that that's how it was. In short, the American dream. Today, it's no longer happening, of course, but there are those that open businesses, that went to do business in China, in Africa, South America. There are still those that are making it here and there. But all in all, it's slavery. And it's a very cunning kind of slavery. Because a person doesn't know whose slave he is. He's slave to money. Because, first of all, he has to work in order to cover all of his debts. Debts also meaning the children, the house, paying all the bills and everything, and vacation and everything in short. And if so, he's pushed to go into overdraft, take another mortgage, take another loan, and so on, to live in overdraft. It's not that bad. This is how everyone lives. Till when? The problem is that if people themselves wouldn't change, then this thing could continue for another 2,000-3,000 years like any other period. Slavery went on for thousands of years, then it was decided that slavery isn't beneficial, but the slave should be interested in the outcome or output of his work. So he was turned into a worker instead of a slave. Later it was decided to raise the slave to the degree of an engineer and so on, to be paid differentially. But we're talking about periods. And during these periods, We didn't notice that people are changing, that they're becoming more egoistic, more cunning, more capitalistic. They're no longer simple people that are willing to work, and that's that. They're thinking about, where can I work less and earn more, and so on. Not some simple peasant who's willing to work without thinking about, what about me? And if not for himself, then at least he's preparing something for his children. But here, in the 1950s, in the 1960s of the 20th century, what happened was, I'd call it an inner revolution inside the person. People as if stopped taking interest in the entire framework of the life that we, the capitalists, have built for them. We made everything for them. Come, work, you're earning, I'm earning, everything's fine. If there's some problem, then we'll have some riots, wars, something, we'll have more to produce, and this how we'll advance. But suddenly, around the 1960s, we started discovering that the youth, the teenagers, the young people, they started losing interest in work and this way of living. Even though that on television and in the movies we keep showing it and so on, but it doesn't work any longer like in the Charlie Chaplin movies from the beginning of the 20th century. Times became very dense, intensive. The First and Second World Wars and the crisis in America and so on. And the hippie generation started back then and so on. Meaning, if we're thinking about working more, building more to have a house for the family and more to have everything, this is how I was programmed. But I see, and I remember those years. This is why I paid attention. I see that people don't want to work hard anymore. Maybe even earn less. But for the work to be interesting. Interesting how? Meaning I need some kind of a psychological compensation. Maybe even a spiritual kind of compensation, one might say, and not necessarily money. I don't mind walking around as a hippie, I don't have to be dressed like everyone, and I don't mind lying and working and this and that. I'm not against it. These are times of gradual change. But people are already talking about a more inner fulfillment. And then, I don't know, they get married. People still get married, but then they get more and more divorced. And children started leaving home. When was there ever such a thing that a child leaves home? Smoking marijuana, taking interest in different things, traveling to faraway places. And something happened to people. A person's inner development started moving in the direction of a different fulfillment, not by the standards that can be pre-written from above. And a person, like a machine, carries it out, gladly accepting to be like everyone else and so on. That for him to advance in life, it means that everyone bought a certain couch, I buy it. Everyone buys this kind of car, I buy it. And then he feels himself great. No, no longer. He doesn't look at it anymore, even though that the movies, radio, television, everything keeps working the way we wanted it to, according to how we, the landlords, ordered it. This engine keeps on working, but it's starting to falter. And so we've reached a state where children, they don't want to hear about this way of life. And we don't even know what to do. There's no work ethic or family ethic. And in general, people are changing. I think that it's more of an inner problem in people that have changed. Besides, a general crisis began to accumulate. We started to understand that soon we're going to run out of oil, gas, metals, who knows where and how, that this isn't something eternal, that more or less we're discovering the end of our development. What are we going to do then? If later on we're going to find some new forms of industry that will allow us to survive out of thin air, I don't know, then great, but if not, and we'll suddenly discover that we're deteriorating, that a gallon of gas is costing me $500. So what do I need a car for? Where will I go? And the same applies to everything. Eventually, our natural resources are limited. We have just one planet. And we see by the statistics and researches, by sending people to examine what we have left in the ground, we started seeing the end from several directions. And also, ecologically wise, our life quality is really dropping. We have created for ourselves such conditions that in the past 100 years, the population doubled itself from 3 billion to 6, 7 billion within the 20th century. And everyone's demanding. Everyone's starting to push, to demand. Work. Everyone wants to live the life. What's going on in Africa or in the Pacific or in different places, India, China? We didn't even know how people are living in China or in India. What do we care? There were a few resorts there that we used to go to. South America. These were places that we used to sell different second-class things to, getting fruits and vegetables from. This is how we used all of these countries and continents, and suddenly, no, they want to be like us, and they have the ability. They aren't less in any way. Suddenly we discover that they can be good engineers, scientists, not only simple workers, because previously we used to look at them as if they're not capable of many things, but now we see that they are. And so what follows is that how will we provide 7 billion people with what in the past 500,000 people used to consume, meaning we're overpopulated. It's terrible. And we can't give everyone everything they need. Earth will not allow it, even if we'd want to. So what do? Therefore, lately, there is the Malthus approach over again. You know what Malthus wrote? That from time to time there have to be wars because they kind of chop off part of the population to the extent to which our ecosystem can bear. And today people are thinking about it seriously, by viruses, by other things, not necessarily by wars because that harms everyone, but to do it in such a way that... So, Once again, we, I'm speaking on behalf of the elites, those that are controlling the world. We're already thinking about how to make it trendy for people not to get married, not to have children, or one child tops, to create such conditions that they won't be able to have more. For people to settle for less, meaning to give them some kind of a drug that'll calm them down, and so they'll live until they gradually. In short, how can we, in a short period of time, reduce the population of the world by half? Or by 3/4, even better. Because if, suppose, there will be in the world from 500 million to 1 billion people, then that's good. With all of today's technology, with robotechniques, with robots, with the 3D printers and so on, and in general, there are many technologies nowadays that we're not bringing into industry at all. But they can provide us without any problem with everything that we need with 5 to 10% of the amount of workers that we have today, meaning that we don't need 90% of the world's population. 90%. Needless. This is what the elites think, that it's just a waste in terms of ecology, natural resources, and everything. We don't need it. But everything that we need, we have without them as well, and we only have to arrange for ourselves. Instead of us as the elites that in the past we used these vast masses in order to make a good life, a safe life for ourselves, having a fat bank account and everything that we have. We now discover that we can do all of these things and even more, actually without people. And the people are actually becoming a burden for us. We have to take care of them, because if we don't, they'll come and break our windows, they'll start rioting, making revolutions, so we have to somehow get rid of them. And therefore, today, and it's well known, there is a clear approach, a clear attitude of how do we reach a state where, in a short, rational period of time, we seriously reduce the amount of people in every country. You talked about the inner revolution that's happening inside a person. That's where we're going. So I'm going to alternately talk about the capitalistic order, the external order, and the inner order happening inside a person. What's going on inside a person in the meantime is that man changed a lot. First of all, really, people don't want to get married. And not necessarily because politics is influencing them this way and culture is pushing them in this direction. But they're becoming more egoistic. And then they don't want to waste their life on all these things. They're losing interest. The desire for these ways of life that they'll have to invest in and be committed to. Are they aware of it? They're aware of it. They're afraid of it, that now I have to get married in order to build a family and have children that I'll have to take care of, and even the wife that I'll have to take care of while she's pregnant and when the kids are ill and so on. And I'm thinking, what do I have as a result? Life's short, as if in my inner feeling of life, I rise above life a bit, and I see why, what for, what's the meaning of life, what am I living for, and what, I live in order to provide someone with something. So what am I getting out of life? What, I'm interested in what happens as a result of having sex. So we have a child, and what, for 20 years I'll have to invest in him till what? Till he either stays at home, living off me, like we see with the younger generation, or maybe he'll just leave and say, bye dad, and I won't see him anymore. So, what do we need it for? We have to understand, previously I was egoistically interested in the younger generation, the kids, they were part of the family, they used to work in my field, taking care of the farm animals and so on. Later, I went to work in a factory, in later generations, and also the child, too. At the age of 12, he used to go to work. The girls used to sit at home, they used to do something with their mother, making fabrics and so on. In short, every child, after I've raised him for 10 years, he was a beneficial, helping force. At least they helped in doing something at home and so on. Today, no. Today, just give them extracurricular activities, having fun. And that's it. I don't feel that the kids make me happy. If I'm ill, I have health care. I don't need the kids or the wife to help me. And also, what can they do? When I grow old, the kids, I don't know where they're going to be till then. They'll maybe barely even know that I'm sick or dying or whatever, and they'll only come to see if there's some kind of heritage to get out of it. The connection is completely different. There's no egoistic connection between the parents and children and the children and the parents. That egoistic interest that you talked about, how does it apply to my work? How did it apply to my work back then? I wanted to raise children, have a family, because I know that this is my home, that they have to help me, and I have to help them. As it says, my house is my castle, meaning I need to have some safe place where I live, and this is my social security and my bank and my medical care, and this is where I rest, and this is where I have a vacation. People didn't simply go on vacation to different places. When did the vacation trend begin? From the 1920s, 1930s even. Before that, there was no such thing as going on vacation. From the moment there is light outside, people used to work. Meaning, I had a natural interest in these things, that I need the younger generation and the younger generation needs me. And this is how they were towards their children, meaning towards my grandchildren, and therefore we lived together, not far apart. That we had to help each other and so on. Today, no need. I have no need for anyone. I have an apartment. I don't need anyone. I have a washing machine if I need. I have a cleaning person that comes for half an hour a day to clean up my apartment. I buy ready-to-eat foods in the supermarket. I have a microwave oven. In short, everything's ready. I don't need anyone. I also don't need a wife to nag me and to demand stuff. If I need, there's always someone. Today, the relations are such that there's no problem. Meaning, I have no inner need to build a family. And also, I myself, I don't want to commit. Meaning a person developed this way internally, and also the corresponding external conditions that a person has built for himself, along with the entire technological advancement and so on. We feel no need for the natural order of life as it used to be in previous generations. What about a person's attitude towards work? You talked about the 50s, 60s of the 20th century as the turning point where an inner revolution began in people, that people no longer wanted to work hard, but it is important for them that the work that they're doing is interesting. Previously, what mattered was money. Where they pay more, this is where I go. Because it's important for life. Later, when money became something that I more or less get everywhere, I'm developing more in the direction of the type, the quality of work. What will I be engaged in? Who am I going to be? What am I? Maybe I prefer to get half the salary that I get in some other place, but I won't be a mine worker or something. Go work there. You'll get 5 times as much as you're getting now. Will you work there? No. You like sitting the way you are, an accountant, you have an office, people come. Great. But there are such professions that you'll be paid much more than you are paid now, but it's unpleasant work. So what's the additional component for the work to be easy? No, not for it to physically be easy, but for it to give inner satisfaction that I'll do what interests me. Suddenly, such desires developed in me, such a demand from within that I want to be engaged in interesting things. And correspondingly, a person chooses what to learn and what to do. He builds his career according to what he thinks that's going to be interesting for him. And it's not that much about the money. Suppose I have like this restaurant menu. I'm suppose in high school now, and everything's open for me. I can choose to be this, 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 or that. Suppose that in several fields you get paid okay. So I choose correspondingly. I went, I studied, I started working someplace, I developed my career. And this is what Yael said, that seemingly modern life allows a young person to choose to develop in whichever direction they want to. I choose, I developed, I invested. 10 years later, when I perform self-scrutiny about how my life today is, where I could have chosen anything that I want, and I did it. And if I compare how I feel today, if I compare my satisfaction with the satisfaction that my grandparents had that worked really hard physically, they were content, and I'm not. What happened to me that I've chosen something according to what I wanted, and suppose the money is okay too, but I don't feel good because you're changing all the time. Changing how? You're changing all the time. 10 years ago and today, you're a completely different person. This used to be interesting for you. Today, something completely different is interesting for you. So much that I'm fed up with my commitments to my wife, my children, my everything. Who used to ask a person in the past if he's fed up with something or not? He used to work in one place. He started working in some factory from the age of 15 till the age of 60, and that was that. He used to work there. So why are people fed up with it today? Because people are constantly changing. The rate at which we're changing grew. What's changing about us? Our desire. I want more special fulfillment. I want for things to be interesting. I want to be connected to special things, to creation. A person is becoming more sophisticated. But you chose it 10 years ago. So what? 10 years ago? It's like a child. What do you mean? He's doing one thing. He throws it away. He wants to do something else. He's developing. You can see it immediately on children. This, then that. What about this? You already forgot about it. It is as if never happened. You're telling him, tidy up. Tidy what up? But you played with it. He doesn't even remember. Because he's developing rapidly. Today, you are also developing quickly. Back then, you've developed till the age of 10, 15, suppose, and that was that. You could continue your life with the same salary, same profession, and that's that. And like your father was a blacksmith, you're a blacksmith. That's how it was. Today, no more. Today, what do I care that this is who they were? I want to be the opposite, and then opposite to the opposite. Because today, the world is changing very quickly, and also people are changing like children. You have to switch several professions in your lifetime because you feel that, that's it, I've exhausted myself. It's no longer interesting. I can also say the same about education. If in the past education wasn't that important, no, but afterwards education was important, but I studied once and that's that. Today I have to learn all the time. In the past, even if education was important, I could be hired for relatively simple kinds of work, like a secretary or even something more complicated. I could be hired, grow in the organization, develop skills, and to gradually climb and accumulate knowledge and proficiency. Today, no more. Today, the least is a BA and preferably an MA. And furthermore, you invest your entire life into work. And like you said, you finish the university, what you've learned is no longer relevant. There's something new that you don't even have a curriculum for, but it's already necessary in the labor market. My mother, she didn't study. She started working. Suddenly, at the age of 40, she got this strong desire to learn. And she went and got a degree and so on. I was taught to get a degree to begin with. So what's happening in the world of education? What changed there? Everything's developing very quickly. Time is becoming condensed, and according to this perception, new perception, we have to advance. Today, a person, in the 70 years that he lives, suppose, he lives through several life cycles compared with the life that people used to live. That's how it is. So on the one hand, you really have a desire for something new all the time, to innovate, the desire for change, and even if you chose something, it was great for a certain period of time. But then, no more. On the other hand, you feel that it really shakes you up, all of these changes, because there's like no continuity. You all the time throw away what you had and you start something anew, and you have to go through different inner changes and adaptation to this new state. We're in some intermediate phase that we don't really know what to do about. We don't know what to do. What to do, if you're asking? Speaking from the point of view of the elites, we don't know what to do. Speaking from the point of view of the middle class, we also don't know what to do. Everything's in decline. And on part of the people that are on the lowest levels, the so-called disadvantaged, I also don't know what to do. Today, no one knows what the future holds. People live. May today be like yesterday. How do you see the future? I see the future in a schizophrenic way. For me, it splits into two, really. either. We follow our ego. What do you mean to follow our ego? That we continue the way we are now. What do you mean? To live and that's that. Let's eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. What do we care what's going to happen? We as if can't do anything about it. We keep on working. We keep going. There are many plans of how to reduce the general population, how to corrupt the demographics, how to make different technological changes. But all in all, this isn't the problem. The problem is that people are looking for a way in life. We see that their demands are more about the question of where are we headed. You see revolutions in the world. You see what's happening in those different Middle Eastern countries, South America, now in Russia and several places. The world is gradually facing the question of what are we living for, on the one hand. On the other hand, if we do not follow our ego, you defined our ego as, let's eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. Yeah, what's good for me? The way we developed to this day, how did we develop to this day? We had big plans, industrial plans for 5 years if we build something, even for 10 years, even though that these plans never panned out. But if you're building something, if there's something that's up to you, that's in your hands, then, you know, you're building, you need a plan, you need engineers, economists, banks to accompany you, and so on, and then you build. That's one thing. But all in all, we didn't develop according to big plans, because we don't know. We don't. We developed according to how the ego pushed us. Now we see that the ego is pushing us in a bad direction. We can't keep on giving it what it wants. We have the inclination to continue as we were, but continuing the way we were, we see that we're going into a crisis. If we'll continue the way we're going, we'll take Earth apart, we'll deplete it, we'll cover it with waste from the different surplus from industry. Today, what do you do? Suppose I, as a normal capitalist, I'm interested for you to buy a cup. A moment after you buy it, for it to break. So that you'll buy again, and for it to break again, and again, and again. Meaning, this is how I have to pass this cup through you in order to benefit from it more and more. So you call this nothing new under the sun, that the world's headed towards destruction, and this is no longer an option. This is a bad option. Because one way or another, it's leading us to a crisis. Another option is that we're learning from nature. We're not going against nature. That we're depleting it completely, eventually being left with nothing. And we see that this way we run into a crisis, but we go along with nature, meaning we start learning from nature how it exists. And for us, as human beings, to make the corresponding changes, both in society and in civilization in general, and in all of our relations, for us to become an integral part of nature. That's the other way. But this way, we needn't think about how to have more and more zeros in the bank. But here, we need to reach a state where we reach relative equality, balanced level of consumption, rational consumption, and it doesn't matter how much a person works or doesn't work, but that a person receives almost the same as everyone else, so that everyone reaches a homogeneous standard of living, that everyone starts improving the relations with other people, like in nature, that everything's harmoniously connected. This is the other way. And this isn't something that just happens. We have to learn from nature and become like it. What kind of changes will it make in the labor market? Tremendous changes, because then we discover in advance the kind of factories, organizations, professions we need, and all the rest, we simply get rid of them. We shut these things down. Really, 5% of the population will have to work, or all the people will work 5% of their time. You said that each person nowadays goes through several life cycles, that after several years, you're no longer content with what you're doing because everything is developing very quickly, like a child that played this, then he goes on to play something else, and so on and so on. Today, I'm no longer content with what I'm doing. So this option B, how will it influence the extent of the content that I feel with what I'm doing? We've reached a state that if our technology, robotechnology, biotechnologies, and more, if all these can give everything that our body needs, then we don't have to work this way. But all of our work is in becoming like nature, to be in harmony with nature, and therefore all of our work is to learn to become like nature. How do I prepare my children for this kind of world? I have children at the age of 12, 15. It's too late. You had to start in advance. I'm sure that there are people watching us now that have smaller children, bigger children. My role as a parent is to prepare my children, both in terms of employment for the new world. What can you do? They're 12, 15. They'll have no work. What are you thinking? They'll have no work. As simple as that. No work. Maybe they'll do things because there's no other choice, but still, we're not interested in opening places where people will just make things, because we're wasting power and energy and destroying ecology. We have to teach people to engage in their inner work, to build correct relations with other people. We have to teach them how to engage in a completely different kind of work, spiritual work, in the direction of culture and education, and not some manual work or something. We don't need that. What do you mean in the direction of culture, education? For a person to be engaged in something by which he could meet his inner needs. He doesn't simply have to go to work in order to get paid and then to go home, rest from the work, and maybe a few hours a week, be engaged in something that interests him. Today, he feels distress because he's not realizing himself, not realizing life. We've reached a state where a person no longer has to work in order to get food. He'll have food anyway. You see, there are already countries that are saying that the time has come to give everyone some kind of a basic income. Suppose everyone gets $2,000 a month. Not in money, but in food, clothes, different things. And what will you do with the rest of your time? In the rest of their time, people will come to places like universities and so on, And there, they will work on self-change, on raising themselves to a different level of their connection, so they'll have a good mutual connection between them. And by that, they will reach a degree of development where they'll start discovering in nature the hidden inner forces of nature. They'll start revealing the harmony around them. Today, when I look at our planet from afar, I see that everyone are mine workers. They're all with their heads stuck in the ground, running after money, miserable. What do they have as a result? They're not human beings. They're ants. Look what they're doing, running around, doing stuff. Do they have a choice? Of course, today you have a choice. Everyone does. So you're talking about a total social change. Yes. Our time's up still in a sentence. In, suppose, 100 years. I hope in 10 or 15 years the world will be completely different. People will be engaged in their interchange, in relations between people, and they'll get whatever they need for a rational, normal life, regardless of the work they're doing in some factory. There will be no factories. Everything will be automated, very simple. As much as we need to serve each other, we will. But most of the hours of the day will be engaged in our inner correction. Our time's up. Thank you very much, Dr. Lightman. Thank you, Yael. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.